This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. We're going to be doing lots of music this evening on Queer Voices, including a segment of audio file in the first hour, and we're going to be interviewing the people from the Houston Pride Band, and they have an upcoming concert on April 1st. Then in the second hour, it's going to be Those Singing Drag Queens, Part 1. So all of that is coming up in this edition of Queer Voices, plus segments from This Way Out, including a news wrap. And please join us. But first, before we do that, we go to the news headquarters of the BBC in London. And we'll be back shortly after that newscast.
BBC World News. I'm Peter Bolgar. Israelis are voting today in general elections that could change the political map of the country. The vote will also be a verdict on the legacy of the Prime Minister, Ariel Sharon, who's now in a coma after a massive stroke in January. Opinion polls indicate that new centrist party he founded, Kadima, will win the most seats. Caroline Hawley reports from Jerusalem.
There are 31 parties vying for votes, but only one that's maintained a steady lead in the polls, Kadima. It means forward, and it's a centrist party that could break the stranglehold that Labour and Likud have had on Israeli politics for decades. But as the party's founder, Ariel Sharon, fights for his life in hospital, the politicians have been battling public apathy. Even though Election Day is a national holiday, there have been predictions that turnout could be a record low. The front-runner, Ehud Olmert, has described the vote as a referendum on his plan to set permanent borders for the country. He's proposing to withdraw from some parts of the West Bank, which was occupied by Israel back in 1967. But he wants to keep other parts, a plan bitterly opposed by the Palestinians.
The Palestinian Prime Minister-designate Ismail Haniyeh has called on Western nations to reconsider their opposition to his proposed administration, which will be dominated by the militant group Hamas. Western nations are threatening to suspend aid to the Palestinian Authority in protest at the refusal of Hamas to endorse the peace accords with Israel. There have been further demonstrations in the United States against legislation that would toughen laws dealing with illegal immigrants. Tens of thousands of students walked out of schools in California and other states to protest against the bill. Earlier, President Bush intervened in the controversy with an appeal for the issue to be tackled in a civilized and dignified way. Mr. Bush's comments came as the Senate prepared to discuss the future of the 11 million people said to have entered the United States illegally. You're listening to the World News from the BBC. The only man charged in America in connection with the September the 11th attacks, Zacharias Moussaoui, has told a sentencing court that he was ordered by Osama bin Laden to fly a plane into the White House. The court in Virginia is deciding whether to impose the death penalty. Justin Webb reports from Washington.
Mr. Moussaoui told the court he had rejoiced when he heard that the attacks of September the 11th had been successful. He had been imprisoned before those attacks on immigration charges. The prosecution claimed that he knew about the plot and could have stopped it if he had told the truth to investigators. In testimony which could well lead to his execution, Mr. Moussaoui said Osama bin Laden had ordered him to fly a plane into the White House and he was to be joined on that flight by the convicted shoe bomber Richard Reid. He acknowledged that he knew about the planned attacks on the World Trade Center. He accepted the suggestion that he had lied to federal agents to ensure that the plot was not discovered, and he had bought a radio in prison to listen to news of what he knew was about to happen.
The president-elect of Haiti, René Préval, has called on the international community to provide long-term financial assistance for his country. Addressing the United Nations Security Council, Mr. Préval said increased economic aid was key to strengthening Haiti's democratic institutions. He also praised the work of the UN's 9,500 peacekeeping troops in Haiti. The Brazilian Finance Minister, Antonio Palocci, has announced he's leaving his post after months of corruption allegations against him. He denies any wrongdoing and says the accusations are politically motivated. He'll be replaced by the former Planning Minister, Guido Mantega, who says there won't be any changes to Brazil's economic policies. Tom Gibb reports.
For months, the opposition and much of Brazil's fiercely anti-government press have been after the blood of the finance minister, Antonio Palocci. First, it was alleged he took illegal campaign donations while mayor of a provincial city. Now he's accused of frequenting a house in the capital, Brasilia, where lobbyists and former aides are said to have held parties with prostitutes and where money is supposed to have arrived by the suitcase. The finance minister denies he ever set foot in the house. He's offered to leave his post in a letter to Brazil's president, Lula da Silva.
A United Nations spokesman in Kabul says an Afghan man who faced the death penalty for converting from Islam to Christianity is seeking asylum abroad. The spokesman made the announcement hours after hundreds of people in northern Afghanistan protested against reports that the man, Abdul Rahman, was to be freed. The case was sent back to prosecutors after court officials said there were gaps in the evidence. And one of the world's leading science fiction writers, the Polish author Stanislaw Lem, has died at the age of 84. Lem's books sold nearly 30 million copies and were translated into more than 40 languages. He won worldwide acclaim for the Cyberiad, a set of tales from the world of robots. BBC World News.
This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Falinski.
And J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Glenn Holt.
And Deborah is out, Renee is out, and Greg is out.
And John.
And John. Mm-hmm. They're not here this week.
We're more out than in, but we're in enough.
Yes. Well, that's true. What did I say? Yes. Well, we're all out. Tonight, we're going to be talking to the Pride Band. They're going to be here shortly. And then we have a lot of music segments.
It just happened that way. Very often, Queer Music Heritage is always on the fourth Monday of the month. And Audiophile is usually on the last Monday of the month. And very often, they hit the same week. Has it tonight.
Unfortunately, though, we're probably getting towards the end of this way out. Is that
beneficial?
They
were getting a bulk of their funding from Planet Out, and Planet Out has pulled the plug, and they gave them a certain amount of days to do something about it. I don't really see any white horses riding in to fund them to stay on the way they were, so I think the middle of June is the last scheduled right now airing of This Way Out. So that'll be a big loss for this program and 150 stations around the world to their programming.
Yes, it's going to be unfortunate because we were very lucky that they covered the news
and so
and
well
segments that they did in, and some of them came from Houston, but a lot of them came from other places, and you contributed.
They had representatives from, you know, Australia regularly, a woman in Canada was and Stephen Pride with his wonderful features on, you know, the movies and celebrities and so forth. It's a good show.
How long has it been on?
Ooh, like 17 years
wow,
or something.
Wow, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Let's see. We've probably been carrying it since the beginning of when it was called Lesbian and Gay Voices in 1993.
Audiophile's been on it since 97.
Time flies.
And I joined Audiophile in 2001.
So that's coming up in the show, and but first let's go to News Wrap from This Way Out.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Activists in four countries challenge bloody discrimination, anti-queer killings are buried in Iraq's sectarian chaos, and Audiophile debuts two soloists and a man band. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 25th, 2006. Bans on gay men donating blood are being debated on three continents. Queer activists and supportive medical professionals have for quite some time been urging reconsideration of such across-the-board bans as more sophisticated blood testing methods have been developed.
The South African National Blood Services prohibits donations by men who've had sex with men during the previous 5 years. But a recent meeting of what's being called the Joint Working Group, composed of registered non-profit groups serving LGBT people in South Africa, and representatives from the country's blood services, determined that donor policy needs to be based on high-risk behavior and not so-called high-risk groups. The panel further concluded that failure to use condoms during anal sex by both heterosexual and homosexual men should be a more pressing concern. A committee of scientific and legal experts, to be selected by all members of the Joint Working Group, is scheduled to continue that dialogue in the coming weeks.
Because of a jump in trauma cases in major hospitals in the Australian state of Tasmania, the Red Cross Blood Service this week issued an urgent plea for people to donate blood to help it meet increasing demand. The Tasmanian Gay and Lesbian Rights Group used the news to urge the Red Cross to review its ban on accepting donations from men who've had male-to-male sex in the past year. Group spokesperson Rodney Kroom said the Red Cross should screen potential donors based on their sexual practices, not on their sexual orientation.
After more than a decade of banning all blood donations by gay men, the American Red Cross this week announced their support for a policy change that would allow such donations, but only from men who've gone at least a year without having had sex with other men. A spokesperson for the Red Cross called the current blanket ban unfair and discriminatory in a statement on the American Association of Blood Banks website, saying it does not appear rational to treat gay sex differently from straight sex. According to a report by the Associated Press, the Red Cross policy change has prompted the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to consider a new risk assessment that would take 3 to 6 months to complete. The current 16-year-old ban prohibits any man who has had sex with another man since 1977 from ever donating blood.
But two prominent groups have come out against any policy change in Canada. Canadian Blood Services, which oversees the nation's blood supply, supports the current ban preventing blood donations by any man who has had sex with another man since 1976, according to a report this week in the Vancouver newspaper, The Province. And David Page, a spokesperson for the Canadian Hemophilia Society, said that the one-year celibacy requirement being discussed in the U.S. is not enough. The information we have now, he said, is that such a change would increase the health risk, not of HIV, but of either unknown or emerging viruses. Canadian Blood Services says it is, however, already conducting a risk assessment on the consequences of a policy change.
India, one of the world's most populous nations and certainly a country of many contradictions, has officially registered its first gay organization, despite the fact that homosexual acts are still illegal there under Penal Code Section 377, a lingering British colonial era law. The Men's Community Development Society has been meeting unofficially in Chennai for 6 years and has over 700 members. News about the group's official registration brought supportive comments in the media this week from several national celebrities. India's courts continue to review Section 377, which makes consensual gay sex punishable by up to 10 years in prison.
South Korea's Ministry of Defense has responded to criticism earlier this year from the country's National Human Rights Commission over its treatment of gay conscripts. All men are required to serve at least 2 years in the country's armed forces. The military will treat homosexual soldiers the same as heterosexual ones, the ministry said in a written statement distributed this week to news agencies. The announcement also comes after a series of unfair dismissal and bullying incidents in the armed forces were reported in the national press. Though the ministry statement suggests more grudging tolerance than welcoming acceptance, it's been applauded by South Korea's queer community as a significant step in the right direction.
Surveys about attitudes towards lesbians, gay men, and queer families poured out of the U.S. this week. A new poll by the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press suggests that the tide of American opposition to marriage equality for same-gender couples may be receding, at least a little. A bare majority of 51% now oppose same-gender marriage, while a similar survey in February 2004 found 63% against, at a time when voters in several states were being pushed to the polls to approve constitutional marriage bans. The number of people who say they strongly oppose same-gender marriage has dropped to 28% from what was 42% in February 2004. Notably, strong opposition has dropped sharply among senior citizens and Republicans who describe themselves as religious moderates. Those supporting marriage equality rose from 30% in early 2004 to 39% now. Evan Wolfson of the equality group Freedom to Marry said that If you give people the information and time they need to understand the harm discrimination in marriage causes real American families, the majority will continue to move toward fairness.
According to a study released this week by the University of Vermont, same-gender family households don't differ all that much from those of the general U.S. population. Professor Glenn Elder presented his new research analyzing the lives of same-gender couples at a recent meeting of the Association of American Geographers. Using sophisticated geographic-based analysis, he and his colleagues were able to compare data on a typical group from U.S. Census tracts with those of same-gender couples who traveled to Vermont from virtually all other U.S. states to enter into civil unions. Of the mostly insignificant differences between queer and heterosexual households, Elder said, "It's surprising on the one hand, but also reassuring. Gays and lesbians who aspire towards the symbolic and real material benefits of marriage are no different from other people who aspire towards domestic stability and material comfort," he said. "These are not people who are ripping the fabric of America."
Children adopted by gays and lesbians grow up no better or worse than those raised by heterosexuals, according to a report released this week by the Evan B. Donaldson Adoption Institute. Based on both the available research and growing experience, the report concludes, adoption by gays and lesbians holds promise as an avenue for achieving permanency for many of the waiting children in foster care. The Institute is a long-established independent organization with no ties to political interest groups or causes, and has for several years been a source of information for journalists, researchers, and policymakers on adoption issues. The report, entitled Expanding Resources for Children, determined that on a range of measurements of social and psychological adjustment, children raised by gay and lesbian parents fare comparably to those raised in so-called traditional families. There is simply no credible research showing that children are harmed when they're adopted by gay and lesbian parents, said Institute Executive Director Adam Pertman, but lots of evidence to indicate they do well in those homes. The report also noted that tens of thousands of children in the foster care system are disadvantaged by laws that bar gays and lesbians from adopting them, and urged that those barriers be lifted.
And a California field poll, also published this week, reveals a growing acceptance of gays and lesbians and underscores the come-out mantra chanted by queer activists since the days of Stonewall. The last comprehensive California poll surveying attitudes towards gays and lesbians in 1997 found that 45% of the respondents believed sexual relationships between adults of the same gender were always wrong. The new poll shows that number has dropped to 32%. Some 67% of Californians now support queer military service, 59% favor bans on workplace discrimination, and 55% say gay and lesbian couples should be allowed to adopt children. Throughout the poll, those most opposed to legal protections for gays and lesbians were also least likely to personally know any. "To me, that's one of the most revealing numbers in the survey," said field pollster Mark DiCamillo, "because it says familiarity with gays and lesbians in your own life has a powerful influence." However, the poll numbers on the issue of marriage equality stayed about the same. A slight majority of Californians remain opposed to same-gender marriage.
And finally, Jamie Raskin, a professor of law at American University, was asked to testify earlier this month at a legislative hearing on a proposed constitutional amendment to ban same-gender marriage in the state of Maryland. At the end of his queer-supportive testimony, Republican Senator Nancy Jacobs said, "Mr. Raskin, my Bible says marriage is only between a man and a woman. What do you have to say about that?" Raskin replied, "Senator, when you took your oath of office, you placed your hand on the Bible and swore to uphold the Constitution. You did not place your hand on the Constitution and swear to uphold the Bible."
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 25th, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written this week by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Sherry Ludd.
This is Queer Voices.
Gee, that sounded pretty good. Didn't our two guests sound pretty good?
Well, you know, it's interesting the variety of music we play here on Queer Views.
Queer Voices.
How soon I forget. But the fact is that we have a wide variety here, and also it's interesting that that is done here locally.
Mm-hmm. We have from the Houston Pride Band, Troy Villamont, and was I close?
It's close enough.
How would you pronounce it?
Well, I say Villamont, like
Villamont. Okay, and Kyler Landry. Is it better?
That's a lot better. I have one of those simple names. Mm-hmm.
Simple Cajun names.
That's right.
Well, tell us a little bit about the Pride Band and how you all got involved and why you got involved.
Well, I actually got involved about 3.5 years ago when my partner and I moved here to Houston. One of the first things that I did when I moved to Houston was looked up the type of different musical, gay area musical performance type that they had here. And of course, the number one that I picked up was the Houston Pride Band, being in music since I was 5 years old. And the second was, of course, the Gay Men's Chorus of Houston, which has now branched out into the Bayou City Performing Arts. I contacted both of these organizations, and both actually contacted me back, and it's been uphill, downhill since then.
Well, and you know, they both
said no, right?
Once
we don't need you, we got enough.
Band heard me play and the chorus heard me sing, you know, needless to say, history has a way of dealing with me.
Yes, that's why we do radio, because we can't do music.
Well, but you have a great face. And
I have
nice
a great face for radio. a little bit about the band is the Houston Pride Band is actually the second oldest gay lesbian band in the country. We're second, or number two, only to the Los Angeles Freedom Band. Houston Pride Band was formed back in 1978, so we're coming up to almost our 30th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, of course, I being only around for 3 of those 30 years or so, I don't have a lot of the history, but I can tell you that it began as the Montrose Marching Band and was formed by a small group of musicians, basically as a way to make new friends and to provide some entertainment for the Houston gay and lesbian community. The Pride Band has several groups that performs at community events throughout the year, as well as concerts and parades. We've done everything from the local gay pride parade, which is fabulous, by the way,
hold a few trophies from that.
Several trophies from that, as a matter of fact. And we've also done things as big as Clinton's inauguration. So, I mean, we've had members all over not only this country, but all over the world. We had some that represented the Houston Pride Band down in Australia for gay games a few years ago.
And we're trying to go to gay games in 06, and that's one of the things we plan on talking about this evening. We're madly raising funds to bring as many members that want to go to gay games in Chicago this year in July. And in addition to that, the LGBA, Lesbian Gay Bands of America, I got it right.
Lesbians and Gay Bands Association. We're worldwide now.
Worldwide, okay, I'm sorry, the association, has decided to do their annual conference in Chicago the week prior to the gay games. So it's going to be a really good week for musicians. I'm looking forward to that opening ceremony, and I know many of our members have experienced this already, and they tell us how wonderful it is. This is going to be my first gay games.
When is that?
That is in July.
It's like a week and a half, almost 2 weeks long. I'm not sure of the dates. I'm sure Russell's listening to me having a fit right now.
I believe, don't quote me, I think it's July 13th, but that information is available on our website if you want to research that further.
And what is your website?
Our website is HoustonPrideBand.org.
Well, there's a very good article that Russell wrote about the history of the band, which is pretty incredible. I mean, the band was at the Hollywood Bowl at one time.
Uh-huh.
It was part of the first March on Washington.
That's correct.
And, you know, it's interesting. As you go through the history since 1978, there's probably much less of an emphasis in schools now of playing instruments, being involved in that. And there's always this talk about, no, here I get political again, but that's part of me. But you know, no child left behind, but we're leaving behind the instruments.
Well,
I guess.
Correct. Not only instruments, but the arts in general.
Yeah, yeah.
No matter what, whether it be chorus, band, art classes, they're taking away from these and allowing children are stopping them from expressing themselves and their creativity.
The kids can always download their culture.
Exactly.
Oh, well, absolutely.
You know, and certainly there's a lot of great things with computers. It opens up the world to a lot of things, but the experience, and as a failed person who played an instrument, I give credit for people who've stuck through it, and especially now when you can go in on the computer and sort of make music, but the idea of actually creating it with a musical instrument and knowing how to play it and understanding it.
Oh, there's a great sense of accomplishment involved in that. And you didn't fail. You were just on a break.
Yeah, an extended cocktail hour.
Right. And that's interesting that y'all bring that up. I read an article recently that said only like 3% of adults over the age of 18 that have ever trained on a musical instrument actively play a musical instrument. And that's kind of sad. Mm-hmm. I know my involvement with the Pride Band came by accident. My partner and I were at... Oh, hi, David. My partner and I were at Empower 1 year. And the Pride Band had a booth, and we had been away from Houston for a while, and we're looking for organizations to get back involved in the community. And I saw Kevin at our booth and started talking to him, and they needed percussionists. It had been almost 25 years for me that
wow.
I had picked up an instrument.
Wow.
And I said, "Are you sure it's okay?" And the whole bit, and the band welcomed me with open arms, and then wanted me to leave very shortly afterwards.
And we're still trying to get rid of him.
How do people join the band?
Show up
your
to rehearsal.
Audition?
No, we do not have. We're basically an open enrollment type where we accept anybody and everybody. Even though you said you're a quote failed musician, come in. We will find a place for you. If you're not up to the skill level where the performance band is, we will actually take you under our wing and get you there. We've had some musicians
That's
that come in.
That's a big
in.
Wing.
Well, we want to consider ourselves an all inclusive organization.
Exactly.
And you know, H&H Music here in Houston used to have a billboard that said, if you can beat it or blow it, you belong in a band. And we'd like to think that we hold that up to a certain extent. We've modified that motto a little bit, and I don't know if I want to say it on the air.
No,
but
I don't think so.
We have modified it. But we want to welcome anyone that wants to help keep the spirit of live music alive in our community. And there's hundreds of thousands of ways to get involved if it's not just playing a musical instrument.
So tell us about this event you have coming up.
On April 1st at 7 p.m.
That is coming up. That's Saturday.
That Saturday
is
night.
Saturday night. We're having a concert called... Music and Laughter, being April Fool's Day.
April 1st, right.
Music and Laughter, the Universal Language. And we have some really, really special surprises for this concert. It's not all going to be serious, as that opening piece was. That was actually called the Finale to Pineapple Pole, which if none of you out there have ever heard of that, I'm not well-versed in that
I hadn't
that
heard
opera.
It until we started rehearsing it, but it's a wonderful piece. We've put a lot of effort into it.
From what I gather, it's about a bunch of ladies who fall in love with the captain of a ship, so they all dress in drag to join this navy and to sail away on this ship so that they can have this captain fall in love with them. And at the end of the show, it shows that they're all dressed in drag. So it kind of has a gay theme to it. And
The ladies are dressing in drag?
The ladies are dressing in, I guess that would be male drag.
Male drag.
Okay.
So they can try to get this captain to fall madly and deeply in love with them.
I heard on a little bit of your CD, the theme from The Simpsons.
That's another one that has
a humorous vein to it.
Exactly. And every piece that we have, in one way or another, will have some type of humorous message to it, whether it be
funny... Or pop culture.
Exactly. Either mm-hmm. it'll bring back childhood memories, such as Bugs Bunny, Hour in the Morning. We have...
That's really sort of interesting, that all of those cartoons had this classical...
Oh, they
exactly.
did.
Yeah.
They did.
A lot of Beethoven's pieces, mm-hmm. a lot of classical music. If you remember, the Marriage of Figaro is actually a huge one in there with Bugs Bunny and the little hunting guy. I don't
Elmer
Fudd.
Of course, that was a whole art form of the way they did cartoons.
Exactly. It was actually art. It's not this animated stuff they
have
now.
When you attend our concert Saturday, I think anyone would be amazed at how many pieces of music are going to be familiar to you.
Oh,
and
definitely.
Probably drum up some great memories.
Mm-hmm. Where is the concert?
The concert is going to be at Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church, which is at actual physical address, is 2025 West 11th, but it's at the corner of T.C. Jester and 11th. It's a huge church there. You can't miss it. And the good thing about our concert, we have a kind of a tradition with the Houston Pride Band. After our concerts, we have a after concert social where the band members actually make food, and we have like a buffet style where you can come in and just meet the members and eat and just have a good old time with us afterwards.
You get to feel whether you want to be part of it.
Exactly. And remember, you don't have to actually play an instrument to be part of the Houston Pride Band. We have what's called Band-Aids, and those are volunteers that come out and help out set up for rehearsals. They help pass out information. They help recruit for us. They do all kind of things. So you don't actually have to just blow an instrument or bang on a drum to be part of the Houston Pride Band.
How many performing members?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that. 3.5 years ago when I came in, the first rehearsal I went to, we had 6 members. You know, and you sit there with 6 people in a little room no bigger than the one we're in now playing on an instrument. It's really disheartening. We've grown to where we have performing now 30 to 35 members at any time. So in 3 years to basically explode as far as membership goes, and it's just amazing to me. It's to go from the instrumentation that we have, from just having a saxophone, a tuba, a trumpet, 2 clarinets, and a flute, and maybe a drummer, you know, to going with, you know, having baritones and trombones and tubas and saxophones,
bassoons, oboes.
I mean,
much more hard to find pieces. We're definitely a group that varies in size, and we keep that in mind when we plan out a year for the Houston Pride Band. Our due structure and our concert structure is based on the fact that some people are traveling, some people are teaching, some people
just want to take a break.
Absolutely.
You know,
so we encourage people to come and join us for whatever's comfortable for you. If you can sit in through 3 seasons, or right now we consider this our spring season, getting ready for the spring concert. Then we're going to go right into Pride after that.
Woo-hoo.
Then comes in, and that's always a fun event, and I'm
that
sure many of y'all have seen comedy. Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and there's no feeling in the world like marching down West Island with the Houston Pride Band.
With 200,000 people watching you.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you what, you know, being from Louisiana, like Troy and I both are, being to Mardi Gras, it's Misha. You know, we have a lot of parades and things, is that, and being in band, I've been through some parades that were just fabulous, but until you march the Houston Pride Parade, you just don't experience a parade.
And that's something this community really needs to be proud of. We're running into more and more people that plan their vacations around coming to the Pride Parade in Houston. So it definitely is an honor for us to be involved. And we're very proud of the trophies that we hold from that parade.
Well, and yes, I have a personal interest in the parade. It's pretty interesting you say that. And we've done some unofficial, unscientific polls and found that about 1/3 of the people who come to the Pride Parade are from outside the metropolitan area. Now, number one, Houston is not a tourist city.
Mm-hmm.
And number
two,
who comes to Houston in June? So, you know, our community does spend money in this area, and hotels.
Absolutely.
And stuff like that, and you know, so we do, you know, we do produce for the city.
And another thing, just being a participant in the parade, something that I'm very proud of, it's not just rows and rows of GLBT folks, it's mm-hmm. our entire city, it's our community. There's people with babies and strollers, and that's a really big thing. And we, you know, as we're recruiting for new members of the Houston Pride Band, we want y'all to keep that in mind. That's a great way to get involved in the community, get involved in the band, and really feel like part of the spirit of Houston.
The fact that we are a performing group, we are a very family-oriented group. We want to see... Bring your kids to our concerts. My 2 nephews came to our concert a while back when we played the selections from Chicago, and they were sitting there clapping and snapping fingers, and, you know, they just loved it. And we love seeing kids. Of course, we never charge for children 10 and under. And, of course, there's a nominal fee to getting to our concerts to help support us, because we are a nonprofit organization. So we ask, you know, if you have nothing to do on a Saturday night, or if before you go and get cocktailed up, come on out.
Okay, we can recap better than that. Let's do the who, what, when, where. The who is the Houston Pride Band.
That's correct.
The what are you promoting?
We have a concert on April 1st, the April Fool's Day, Saturday,
it's
April
the
1st.
And the where?
Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church, corner of T.C. Jester and 11th Street.
What time is the event?
7 o'clock.
And where can people get more information?
They can contact us by going on our website, www.houstonprideband.org, or can contact us at 713-862-9491. and we can answer all your questions there.
We want to thank Kyler and Troy, and you're listening to Queer Voices.
Get ready, just a few minutes more. Gonna get that old feeling when you walk through that door. Cause tonight is the night that I'm feeling alright. We'll be making love the whole night through. So I'm saving all my love. Yes, I'm saving all my love. Yes, I'm saving.
Very nice. That was David McAlmont, McAlmont, through most of the 90s. He was part of a duo, McAlmont and Butler, popular in England, and this is a solo album called You Go to My Head, and I really like what he did with the Whitney Houston song, Saving All My Love for You. Up next, please listen to This Way Out.
As Iraq's sectarian crisis is measured each day by the number of bodies left by death squads overnight, the specific targeting of lesbians and gay men is being ignored by both the occupying forces and the mainstream media. For a rare first-hand look at the desperate situation facing Iraqi queers, we turn to the March 23rd installment of Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez.
As violence continues on a daily basis in Iraq, President Bush is continuing his media offensive this week. A town hall-style meeting in West Virginia Wednesday was his latest in five straight days of appearances. The president has repeatedly lauded what he called democracy in Iraq and the freedoms from living under Saddam Hussein's oppressive regime. But yet another story out of the country paints a very different picture. Shia death squads in Iraq have been systematically targeting gay Iraqis for persecution and execution. The attacks follow a death to gays fatwa issued by Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani last October. In a question and answer section of his website, Sistani says homosexuality is, quote, forbidden, and calls for the killing of gays in the, quote, worst, most severe way.
The story comes in this week's issue of Gay City News. It reports that the Badr Corps have heeded Sistani's call and have been targeting gay Iraqis. The Badr Corps is the military arm of the Iranian-backed Supreme Council of the Islamic Revolution in Iraq, a powerful Shia group that's the largest political formation in Iraq's Shia community. For more on the story, we are joined by Ali Hilli, a gay Muslim Iraqi living in exile in Britain. He fled Iraq 2 years ago. 5 months ago, he founded the Abu Nawas group to support persecuted gay Iraqis. He joins us on the line from London. We're also joined on the telephone here in New York by Doug Ireland, who broke the story in the Gay City News, a columnist for The Nation magazine, Village Voice, and New York Observer for years, also contributing editor of PAS, the monthly for HIV-positive community. Ali Hilli, let's begin with you in London. What was your experience in Iraq, and why have you gone into exile?
Iraq, at the time of Saddam, I'm talking about as a gay Iraqi, it was not as bad as we can see now. In fact, people are really accepting gays, especially in theaters, in entertainment, in media. We have several actors, singers, very popular before. There was no homophobic attitude towards gay and lesbians. Most of them are welcomed in the community, in the society, with the rest of the Iraq.
And what has happened in the period since the U.S. occupation?
Well, we started to receive information, in particular the last 2 years, when we made contact with my old friends in Baghdad, and horrific details about killing, intimidation, harassing, arresting. We were very modern, we were very Western culturalized Iraq comparing to the rest of the Middle East. Why it's been shifted to this Islamic Dark Ages country?
Can you tell us about the fatwa issued by Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, the section on his website that talks about homosexuality is forbidden and calls for the killing of gays in the worst, most severe way?
Sistani is the highest spiritual leader for Shia in the Middle East. And on his website, we found an order for killing for gay and lesbians. In fact, I'm looking at it right now, till this moment. Our sources inside Iraq told us that they used this print and send it to people from this website.
We're also joined by journalist Doug Ireland, who broke the story in the Gay City News. Doug, welcome to Democracy Now.
Good morning, Juan.
Now, this is a human rights issue that has gotten no attention, absolutely no attention here in the United States.
The organized and systematic kidnapping and assassination of gay people in Iraq has gotten absolutely zero coverage in United States media. The killings are ongoing. They are almost a daily occurrence. I spoke this past weekend with an underground gay activist in Baghdad who told me that just in the previous week, four gay Iraqis had been found murdered in the usual style employed by the Badr Corps, which is to say the bodies are discovered with their hands bound behind their backs and bullets in the back of the head. The Badr Corps, which is the military arm of the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq, is compiling lists of homosexuals. Many gay Iraqis are warned that if they do not get married, they will be subject to assassination. They usually give them about a month to change their ways, as they put it. And if they don't, they are targeted for murder. And since the Ayatollah Sistani's death fatwa against gays, this has given a green light for manifestations of public homophobia in the most violent way by Shia Muslims in Iraq. So you have situations where Badr Corps thugs will drag someone into the street and begin beating them, and they are then surrounded by crowds of Shia passers-by who cheer them on. It's a very desperate situation. The gay activist I spoke to in Baghdad, with practically tears in his voice, was begging the West to please, we need protection. But when gay activists have gone to the U.S. authorities in the green zone, I was told they treat the gay Iraqis who are begging them for protection with contempt and derision, which is rather scandalous.
Ali Hilli, you left Iraq 2 years ago, living in exile now, afraid to even show your face. Were you a supporter of Saddam Hussein?
No. Actually, personally, I have big hate for this person. He is the worst thing that ever happened to Iraq, maybe, until we saw this religious mullahs who brought to the government. Iran has a great, huge influence now on Iraqi government. And they want to adapt the Islamic Iran version inside Iraq and in the south. The last report we got today from Mr. Mohammed al-Shahwani of the Al-Ghad newspaper, it says names and addresses belonging to Badr organization closely affiliated to the Iranian regime were discovered during a raid by the Iraqi intelligence agency against a police center last month. An Iranian were arrested during the raid in Iraq. One is an officer intelligence from Iranian regime. This proved that Iraq has been penetrated by the Iranian regime through the mullahs and religious parties.
Ali Hilli, we want to thank you very much for being with us and for speaking out where you are now in Britain, having gone into exile from Iraq, and Doug Ireland of Gay City News for breaking this story.
Our sincerest thanks to Amy Goodman, Juan Gonzalez, and Democracy Now! For permission to air an edited version of their segment, Iraqi Exile Speaks Out Against the Targeting of Gay Iraqis by Shia Death Squads. It can be heard in its entirety at democracynow.org.
Hello, this is Angela Robinson, writer-director of the film Debs and director of the film Herbie, Fully Loaded. And you're listening to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine.
The inspiration for the artists featured in this month's visit to the audiophile comes from the big city, personal experience, and disco.
I'm tired of all this craziness. I can hardly believe it, hardly believe it. I know I'm not your therapist, but you gotta believe me, you gotta believe me.
Artist who just goes by the name Darren starts this segment with his debut album called Anything Is Possible. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
I'm Chris Wilson, and you're listening to Audiophile. Darren moved from the UK to New York City 6 years ago and fell in love with the city, finding much of his inspiration from the people he met.
The album was about my combination of my British-influenced pop music and the influence of music that I found in New York City, and also a combination of my experiences in New York City, whether that be traumatic or enlightening. And this all came together on the album Anything Is Possible.
You've frozen my heart with your cruel words. You turned me in and out, made me start to doubt. You messed with my mind until I didn't know what was up, what was going down. Oh, love can push you to the limit, make you cross that fine line between pleasure and pain. Oh, love can push you to the limit, set your heart on fire, then burn you with love's brutal flame.
Find out more about Darren and his album Anything Is Possible at www.darrenmusic.com. That's www.darrenmusic.com.
Matt Clark is from Indiana, and his first album is called Free Your Mind.
Too hard to be sure that your thoughts are what you believe. I know it's hard sometimes to be living. But too many people are so insecure. Mistakes are easy to make, but now is the time for us to be giving. Just free your mind.
Clark's album takes acoustic pop and adds lyrics that are both passionate and thought-provoking.
Basically, I had gone to a point in my life where I had this collection of songs regarding personal experience, social commentary, and it was just time to put it down, and I wanted to share it with other people. We slammed it together in 3 weeks, and it turned out fantastically. I'm very proud of it.
In your life, you might meet someone more inclined than me.
You can learn more about Matt Clark's album, Free Your Mind, at www.cdbaby.com.
Okay, you may think you've heard this next song before, but not like this. From England is a quartet who call themselves, Are You Ready? Four Poofs and a Piano. And their debut album is called Screamin' Party Anthems.
Hi, hello, we're your weather girl.
And we got
The album includes 13 medleys with about 85 songs, and we can't do justice here to how much fun this CD is. The guys are Ian, Dave, Stephen, and David, and Ian tells us about it.
Well, this is our debut album, and the last thing we expected to be doing was a whole load of pop songs. I mean, we're far too old to be in a boy band, dear. But we were asked to do it, and we had a brilliant time recording it. It's a whole range of medleys. There's a bit of ABBA in there, there's Kylie, we've got Madonna, Village People, Pet Shop Boys. You know, all quite butch, nothing camp about it at all, dear. But we touch on about 85 songs altogether. It makes us feel great when we listen to it, and we just hope people enjoy it.
Spells their name starting with the number 4, so you can find out more about Screamin' Party Anthems at www.4poofsandapiano.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas 77006, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiofile.org.
Audiophile is produced by J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. Keep listening.
For a melodious half-hour collection of our audiophile producers' picks for the best queer-created music of 2005, log on to thiswayout.org. Find out how you can own the Audiophile 2005 Year in Review. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Sherry Lund, Rick Watts, Rex Walkner, Graham Underhill, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material, with a very special thanks to Amy Goodman, Juan Gonzalez, and the producers of Democracy Now! Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on planetout.com. There's also a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. We thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some unique This Way Out queer history, music, and culture CDs that you can own as our thanks. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on 2UUU, Nowra, New South Wales, WOMR, Provincetown, Massachusetts, KOOP, Austin, Texas, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
What a nice music show. We want to thank our live guests from the Houston Pride Band, Kelly Landry and Troy Villamont. I hope I did a better job pronouncing that time. Their event's coming up this first. See HoustonPrideBand.org. And this is, again, a music show. Next up is Queer Music Heritage with a feature I put together called Those Singing Drag Queens.
And, of course, next week we're going to have David Elliott, among other guests, to talk about some national issues, being the first Monday of the month. And we're hoping to schedule a few other things, including the Bunnies Party coming up soon, and some other events. You know, it's starting the springtime. A lot of things
all
are happening.
All the springtime stuff will be probably before we know it.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valinsky, Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, and Glenn Holt.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. This way.
a madam. I want to be one of the girls. I know I'm not pretty, I know I'm not cute, but I'd like to shake my heels in a house of ill repute. I don't want to be a madam. I want to be one of the girls. I was always kind of lazy. I tire easily, it is said. A madam is on her feet all night, but the girls can go to bed. A madam is like an actress. She's through before she starts. No matter how well she auditions, it's the girls that gets the part. I don't want to be a madam. I want to be one of the girls. I will take Elvis Presley. We know he's not chaste, but his sideburns tickled when his motorcycle's raced. I don't want to be a madam. I want to be one of the girls. Now, I don't want to be a madam. I just want to be one of the girls called Ray. The madams carry the dough to the bank, but it's the girls that sock it away. So don't you call me madam, and don't you call me sister. And after the hospital bill I got, don't you dare to call me mister. I don't want to be a madam. I want to be one of the girls. I know I'm no beauty. I do my work well, and I don't give green stamps to the merchandise I sell. I don't want to be a madam. I want to be one of the girls. Oh, yes.
This is Queer Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. I'm J.D. Doyle, and welcome to a very special show. I'm calling it Those Singing Drag Queens, and to some, the title might sound a little flip or even contradictory. No, I'm not talking about drag queens who lip sync, because our culture has a long history of drag artists or female impersonators who did indeed do their own singing. Stick with me, and on tonight's show, we'll explore singing drag artists from the 20s up through the 80s, and we'll visit with one of the most renowned, who started performing before Stonewall and is still active. From Atlanta, we'll meet Diamond Lil. But I said I'll cover from the 1920s through the 1980s. That's just on this show, which is part one. Next month, I'll be back to cover the rest, about the last 15 to 20 years of drag artists who do their own singing. And I might as well mention this now. My regular listeners know that I generally have two versions of my show. One is tailored for airing on Queer Voices, meaning it's limited to about 58 minutes, but the version at my website does not have that time constraint. That allows me to give more extensive interviews and to play songs that, well, I just can't play on regular radio. Okay, that's enough introduction, and I've not told you yet who opened the show. I gave that honor to the drag artist who I consider to be the leader of the pack, Ray Bourbon. And his song, I Don't Want to Be a Madam, was recorded in 1957. I'll devote more time to Ray a little later, but I want to approach this subject roughly chronologically, so that takes us back to the early 20s. The earliest recording of a drag performer that I know of is from around 1922, and is by Ross Hamilton, who performed under the name of Marjorie. But I need to go back a few years earlier, to 1917, during World War I, when a group of Canadian soldiers stationed in France got together for a variety show, which led to forming a professional troupe. They named themselves the Dumbbells, after the logo for their military division, and had much success for over 10 years. Many of the individual members released solo recordings, on 78s of course, and in 1977, these were gathered together into an album, which is how I got the song by Ross Hamilton. Now remember, this recording is taken from a 78 RPM record and is 84 years old. Here's Ross Hamilton, known as Marjorie, and a little of the song, Darling, I Love You.
number of the artists you hear tonight are from England, like this next performer, who had a long career. Douglas Bing was one of the most popular variety and cabaret artists from the 20s and 30s, and a majority of his performances were in drag. This particular track, from 1932, is called At the Ball.
You'll never be ready for the ball, ma'am, and the master's downstairs getting so impatient.
Now, don't fuss me, Annie. There's plenty of time, and I must sew these bugles on the vessel.
I'm sorry, ma'am, but it's Mavican night.
Come along, Blanche. All this dilly-dallying is such tomfoolery. Oh, tut-tut-tut-tut. Why will the colonel use such vulgar words?
I don't think he cares for parties, ma'am. Do you, ma'am?
Do I, Annie? Ah. Give me the chance to recapture romance. Give me a night of the ball. Give me the thrill of the waltz and quadrille. Music and lights and enthrall. Give me the fun when dressing's begun. Fires in the bedroom at four. Awful of verb in that pink satin merb. Only fate knows what's in store. Ah, there's the cab at the door. For a night in the ballroom. Oh, for the music so grand. Oh, for the palms and the parquet. Oh, for the strains of the band. Chaperones snooze in their sequins. Wallflowers wilt by the wall. But everyone there's put on clean underwear. All for the ball.
Douglas Bing from 1932. And like most of the artists on this show, in order to cover as many as possible, unfortunately, I will only be able to give you a taste of them, rather than play the whole songs, which in some cases, you'll thank me. And here's another interesting female impersonator, Billy McAllister. He is probably more known for a comedy album released in 1972 called What a Big Piece of Meat. That was put out by producer Rudy Ray Moore, who found much success in the 70s by issuing very X-rated comedy recordings by himself and a stable of others. But I only recently discovered that Billy McAllister's career goes back 20 years earlier. In 1952, he recorded at least 4 songs for a Memphis label. And the song I picked is interesting because it obviously was recorded as a female impersonator, because it is sung to a man. Its title, 31E Blues, refers to his trip down Highway 31 to Nashville in search of his lover man.
Well, I'm gonna take 31E, going down to Nashville, Tennessee. Well, I'm gonna take 31E, going down to Nashville, Tennessee.
Billy McAllister from 1952, and I wish I had a lot more recordings by him. I introduced the show with Ray Bourbon, and now I'm going to tell you more about him. In my opinion, he was the leading drag artist of the early years. Yes, there were other famous performers I could mention, such as Charles Pierce, T.C. Jones, and Jim Bailey, and you'll hear about them a little later, but they only released 2 or 3 albums each. Ray Bourbon was many times more prolific. Starting in the mid-30s, he recorded about 40 78 RPM records, and in the 1950s and 60s released 11 LPs. I'm not sure that even RuPaul or Divine or other modern artists can match that, even in today's era of multiple CD singles. On some of Ray Bourbon's early 78s, he spelled his name R-A-Y, and then he switched it to R-A-E, and I'll explain that after I read something from his obituary. I've got a couple lines from the obituary that ran for him in Variety magazine. Bourbon died July 19, 1971. In addition to the facts of the obituary, you might notice the language of the way Variety magazine described Bourbon. And I quote, "Ray Bourbon, 78, cafe entertainer, died of a heart attack in the state hospital at Big Springs, Texas. He had been serving a life jail term as an accomplice in a 1968 murder stemming from a dispute over pet dogs. Bourbon, who did femme impersonations in vaudeville as well as sophisticated songs in niteries, played many rooms in New York and elsewhere. He came to the attention of Mae West, who cast him in two of her shows. At one time, in 1956, he sent out press releases stating that he had had a sex change operation. So says the obituary. But that last part was all hype. He didn't have an operation. It was rumors perpetuated by him, and he milked it. On one of his albums from around 1956, he even reproduced the newspaper articles that talked about him having a sex change. That album was even titled, Let Me Tell You About My Operation. Bourbon, to say the least, was quite colorful. You'll hear his trademark laugh or giggle in this song. It's called When I Said No to Joe. From the album I just mentioned, Let Me Tell You About My Operation.
I've turned down fortunes and I've done it with a smile. I've unsigned movie contracts I've dumped within my file. I've nixed plenty of offers for pleasure trips across the sea and many propositions that were coyly made to me. These things were never tough to shun. My dear, I know just what to forego. But the hardest thing I've ever done was when I said no to Joe. He was very tall and handsome, just the answer to a prayer. My friends all thought me quite insane when I gave him the air. I'd always planned that we would marry, but my plans got quite a blow. When he borrowed my mascara, that's when I said no to Joe. I've turned down swell apartments, a car, a chauffeur, and maid. Ermine coats, Caporelli gowns, those gifts I can evade. I've spurned the rings and other things that women always seem to wish. I've shook my head in calm disdain and left those tempters with a swish. I had my heart all set on a very old-fashioned bow. So the hardest thing I've ever done was when I said no to Joe. Oh, Joe was a gal's ideal, so very sweet and refined. He had a lot of sex appeal, and in these days that's hard to find. My dates with him became a fixture. The family knew he was my beau. But when I caught him kissing Tab Hunter's picture, that's when I said no to Joe and meant it, Mary.
The incomparable Ray Bourbon. This next artist is T.C. Jones. He also was very popular in the 50s and 60s, appearing in a couple of Broadway revues, the most famous being The New Faces of 1952. That was the same show that gave Paul Lynde his start. Jones appeared in the movies Promises, Promises and the Monkees movie Head, and on television on Ed Sullivan, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, and even on The Wild Wild West. He recorded two albums in the late 50s called Mask and Gown and Himself, and both included Betty Davis impressions. From his 1959 album called Himself, you'll hear his version of Betty Davis singing the song Bill.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to present our impression of Miss Betty Davis as she walks down Lover's Lane hand in hand with a wonderful, wonderful guy by the name of Bill. Now, I used to dream that I would discover a perfect lover someday. The wrong filter. I knew I'd recognize him if ever he came round my way. Now, I used to kind of fancy then he'd be one of those card-like kinds of men with a giant brain and with a noble head, like the heroes bold in those books that I tread. But along came Bill. He was an ordinary guy. Now you meet him on the street, you never notice him. His form and face, his manly grace, they're not the kind that you'd find in a statue, and I can't explain. It's surely not his brain that makes me thrill 7-8. Now I love him because he's, I don't know. Because he's just my, oh, what? was his name again? Let's see, there was Tom, and there was George, and there was Paul, and there was Peter, and there was Re-Peter, and I was sick for a year. Of course. My bill at the end, finish, B-flat chord.
In 1960, Bobby Marchand had a number one R&B hit with the song There Is Something on Your Mind, and he had quite a colorful background. In 1953, he organized a troupe of female impersonators called the Powder Box Revue. And when it was booked in New Orleans for a while, he decided to stay and worked in the clubs as a female impersonator, MC, and singer. He was signed to Ace Records and worked for a while with Huey Piano Smith, producing some of the finest New Orleans rock and roll. He recorded for various record labels through the 70s, but never matched his hit, There Is Something on Your Mind. The song I picked for you to hear by Bobby Marchand was his first success from 1956, an odd number called Chicky Wah Wah. Lyrically, you might first think, oh, this is a heterosexual song. But if you pay attention, you might wonder why he didn't seem to know how to react to that sweet little girl.
Chicky Wah Wah Wah.
Here's another singing drag queen, this time a very obscure one who moved from Canada to England in 1960 and did sort of a comedy opera style. Here's Jean Fredericks with an English music hall favorite, Nobody Loves a Fairy When She's 40.
For years a fairy queen I've been. For years I foiled that demon king. Fairy days are ending when your wand has started
Gene Friedrichs had two recordings, both very rare. One was a 1964 album called Recitals Are a Drag, and the song I played came from what I believe was her only 45. A very popular drag queen in England in the 60s and 70s was Lee Sutton, and again, his act was more comedy than singing. But I found this song quite interesting. From his 1968 album, presenting Lee Sutton a near miss, here's The Lady is a Fake.
I wear a dress with the bristles sewn in. Boom, 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 boom. I sink a pint when I ought to sip gin. There's no flies on me, but you can see where they've been. And that's why the lady's a fake. Men try to date me, convinced I'm a dame. They take me swimming, it does seem a shame. We get undressed and we both feel the same. Snap! Except that I'm built bigger. That's why the lady's a fake. When I perform, I act like a professional. After the show, this hair ain't there. I hang it up while I'm having my break. You've got to bridge the gap sometimes, darling. That's why the lady's a fake. When people ask what undies I wear, I just declare at once why France. They call me Miss, but it should be mistake. That's why the ladies thing. Let me repeat, things ain't what they seem. It's like a dream. In bed I'm Fred. I find it safer to stay wide awake. Don't call me madam. Saves an atom. That's why the lady is a fake.
You coax the blues right out of the hall. You charm the husk right off of the corn. Mame, you've got the banjo strumming and plucking out a tune to beat the band. The whole plantation's humming since you brought Dixie back to Dixieland.
Following Lee Sutton was Danny LaRue from his 1970 album, Hello Danny. Now, LaRue is practically a national institution in England and has been in the business since the late 60s, and at age 78 is still performing. He's had many recordings, has been in movies, and has been a very active performer in nightclubs and West End shows. His recordings are all singing rather than including any comedy. And as you might have picked up from hearing a little of his version of Maine, his style was more in the English music hall mode. Back to America, and we're in the late 60s. And by now, I don't have to tell you that many of the singing drag queens would not have been accused of being singers. A very good example is one known just as Michelle, who had two albums, and the first was itself a rarity, a two-record set of a live performance called Ready or Not, It's Me. She followed up that album with one called It's Me Again from around 1968, which is where this song comes from, the non-melodic Why Am I So Lovely?
Why was I born so lovely? Fabulous face, figure up great, a case of simple facts. So lovely, I'm the ideal, what you call really sack. Whenever I go out walking, guys always whistle and stare, nudging each other. My dad. carrier and other points of interest. What was I born so lovely? I may be quite the most delightful sight you'll ever see. Sweet as pie and so lovely. Heavens above, I'm such a lovely me.
Gee, I could listen to her, well, not very long. But let's reflect a moment. Michelle is about the first drag artist, at least who released recordings, who actually used a name that was decidedly female. Everyone else I've played have used male names. Or they used names that were neutral. Lee, Ray, Jean. For the most part, these names were their real names, and the artist didn't really feminize them in the early days. Perhaps they were maintaining the idea that this was an act rather than an identity. Or perhaps it was a little in reaction to the laws. In some places in the early years, it was illegal to perform in drag, so it may have been just less hassle to use a man's name. It was probably a combination of many factors. Now we're up to one of my favorites, Charles Pierce. Pierce was one of the most famous of the drag performers of our culture. In his act, he gave gleefully nasty impersonations of Betty Davis, Joan Crawford, Tallulah Bankhead, Mae West, Carol Channing, Katharine Hepburn, Gloria Swanson, Barbara Stanwyck, and many others. His mimicry was expert, and he coupled it with gaudy costumes and outrageous humor in a career that spanned four decades and included frequent television and movie appearances. He recorded two comedy albums in the 70s, and in 1983, his legendary Ladies of the Silver Screen show was captured on video. While he did very little singing in his act, I could just not leave him out of this show, and found on one of his videos the perfect song. Here's Charles Pierce and Want to Buy an Illusion.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Our whole show has been an illusion, you know that. Just an illusion. Want to buy an illusion? Slightly used, secondhand. Such romantic illusions, reaching high, built on sand. They have a touch of paradise, a spell you can't explain. For in this crazy kind of paradise, you are in love again. Want to buy an illusion, slightly used, just like new. Such romantic illusions, they were done, now they're through. We played them all for laughs. It was strictly untrue. So take an illusion. All for fun and all just for you. I was married once. I'm one of the boys who's one of the girls. I wear my hair short, I wear it in curls. Hey, I can be campy, I can be straight. Shall we talk about that later in the dressing room? Sometimes I'm even my very own date. Not tonight, Charles. You have a headache. In spite of the dress, the finesse, and the poise, whee! I'm one of the girls who's really one of the B-O-Y-S-G-I-R-L-S. Good night.
That was Charles Pierce. And this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of all the drag queens and their recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience, Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Friday night, Saturday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. Another very popular illusionist was Jim Bailey, who's been performing since the early 70s in Las Vegas, on television and in the movies, and of course on record. His impressions were dead on, especially of Judy Garland and Barbra Streisand, as you'll hear in this short medley from his 1973 album, Live at Carnegie Hall.
You made me love you. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. You made me love you. And all the time you knew it, I guess you always knew it. You made me happy sometimes. You made me glad. But there were times. I didn't want to tell you. I think you're grand. That's true. Yes, I do. Did I do? You know I do. I can't tell you what I'm feeling. The very mention of your name sends my heart reeling. You know you made me love you.
What? I shall now walk to the piano. Wow, it was a long walk, wasn't it? Father has a business, strictly secondhand. Everything from toothpicks to a baby grand. Stuff in our apartment came from Father's store. Even clothes I'm wearing, someone wore before. Not this one. Now it's no wonder that I feel abused. Well, I never get a thing what ain't been used. I'm wearing second-hand hats, second-hand bows. That's why they call me second-hand Rose. Even my pajamas when I don them got somebody else's initials on them. Second-hand hats, I'm sick of wearing second-hand hats. I never get what other girlies do. Once while strolling through the Ritz, a girl got my goat. She nudged her friend and said, "Hey, Seal, there goes my old fur coat." Well, everyone knows that I'm just secondhand Rose from Second Avenue.
That I once couldn't see beyond my kitchen sink. But I'm still in the, I'm still the same as I always was. And just because I'm famous and I'm a star in Shakespeare, I'm still the same girl that I was before Gough Whitlam made me a dame. I'll tell you in a minute. I'm glad I came. And say that I've seen it as a superstar, a mother and a wife. And I hope that I pass muster when my grandchildren cluster around to hear the story of my life. When my husband Norm had his op, I was caught on my it, don't go too far, but if you have to do your worst, can I have it in a jar? So at least I can say that I've seen it.
The unmistakable Dame Edna. Barry Humphries first found success in his native Australia, where he created the character Edna Everidge in 1956. That role has served him well in the theater, television, and on film. One of the earliest of his shows to make it to vinyl in 1976 was Housewife Superstar, from where I got the song you just heard called Here I Am. And I should add that Humphries is one of the very few heterosexuals to appear on this show. And here's some more trivia. The country of Australia has just released a series of postage stamps featuring his picture, which has got to be some sort of first for a drag artist. In 1977, a movie came out named Outrageous, starring Canadian female impersonator Craig Russell. And 10 years later, it even had a sequel, Too Outrageous. Russell was one of the major female impersonators of the 70s and 80s, and did remarkable impressions of female stars. He was well known for doing Judy Garland and Barbara Streisand and Mae West. But I thought I would give you a taste of his Carol Channing with a dash of Marlena Dietrich and Ethel Merman.
Let's be frank. Well, frankly, I'd rather be
Carol Channing.
A kiss on the hand may be quite continental, but diamonds are a girl's best friend. A kiss may be grand, but it won't pay the rental on your humble flat or help you at the idle mat.
Now that's my battle hymn of the Republic. I've been doing that song now for over 25 years and it's almost perfect. Who in the world could ever replace me as Lorelei Lee? Well, if gentlemen prefer blondes, why not the eternal Marlene Dietrich?
Men grow cold as girls grow old, and we all lose our charms in the end. But square cut or pear shape, these rocks don't lose their shape. Diamonds are a girl's best friend.
Oh dear. Oh, that song is not for Marlena. It was written for a trumpet, not a bass fiddle. Let's try Ethel Merman.
Some men buy and some men sigh that to make you their bride they intend. But buyers of diamonds, they're such goddamn liars. Diamonds are a girl's best
Well, thanks, girls, for proving there's only one Lorelei Lee, and that's me.
Time rolls on, and youth is gone, and you can straighten up when you bend. But stiff, that for stiff knees, you stand straight at stiff knees. Diamonds are a girl's best. Don't mean rhinestones, diamonds are a girl's best friend.
Diamond Lil. You're listening to Queer Music Heritage.
One of the natural hazards of doing a history show, especially since this is part one of the story, is that most of the artists are no longer with us. But I am very pleased to bring you an interview with an artist who started performing drag before Stonewall and is still active today. She's a true Atlanta legend, and her name is Diamond Lil. And she stood apart from the other Atlanta drag queens in the early days because she didn't lip sync. She did her own singing, as you'll hear in this short introduction to her style. Where did you grow up?
Grew up in Savannah, Georgia, land of the oleanders and the wisteria and the Spanish moss.
When did you start performing for people in drag?
I did at little parties. You know, people would have little parties and stuff, and little cocktail parties, and I would do songs. So I danced with soldiers and sailors. They loved it.
Were you lip-syncing then?
Mostly dancing, mostly just dance music.
And you progressed to lip-syncing then?
Oh, yes, I did that. And I also did a few things with live piano. There was a club that had live piano, you know, that had guest singers here and there. I did some guest spots there. Not a whole lot, because in early days, you know, drag was on the blue laws. As, you know, you could get arrested for that, for being a drag. So, you know, folks just didn't do drag much. I could paint up a little bit, you know, put a little lip rouge on and a little eyebrow pencil and stuff, but basically not full drag or something, a little bit of paint.
How did you get the name Diamond Lil?
In the olden years, you know, drag queens had to go with men's names. Like Ray Bourbon was R-A-Y Bourbon. And then when he supposedly had that sex change in Mexico, which was all fake, I changed to R-A-E, Ray Bourbon, R-A-E. Well, he told me all that and had those fake papers where he could play cities like Atlanta that didn't allow drag. So he claimed he was a woman. And then Charles Pierce, that's how he got his name, Charles, and T.C. Jones, Charles Pierce, and, you know, others. So I went to Columbus, Ohio, and came up with the name Leslie Diamond. Well, Leslie's a crossover name. It's be a man or a woman. So I used that in Columbus, Ohio. I came back to Atlanta after I did that stint there. And I got hired here at one of the clubs, and the owner said, well, what is your name? How do I announce you? I said, well, I don't know. I said, people just know me as Lil all over Atlanta. And I said, that's kind of silly. I don't have, and I don't want to use Leslie Diamond. I'm through with that name. And he said, well, you're on. What am I to say? Just Lil or what? And I said, what about Diamond Lil? Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Diamond Lil. And at that time, I really hadn't paid much attention to Mae West, by the way, because she was, you know, popular in the 20s. And she was way before my time. And so forth, and I didn't know that she had written a play entitled I'm Well, but she had. I'm sure you've heard of it. So I didn't even know that until, well, I'd say 2-3 years later. I said, oh, Jesus, people are going to think you stole it from me. And I said, well, no, you didn't. I said, you got it erroneously, and to hell with it, you've already got it.
Well, I try not to get too deep into an interview without hearing some more music. So could you please tell me about the song Love Generator?
Love Generator is the weirdest thing that has ever happened in show business. Love Generator was supposed to have been Cabbage Town Katie. All right. Well, we got into the studio, and I got this producer. Well, the producer, which I didn't know, wanted to do his own thing. So he began saying, well, you need to straighten out this track. And he said, well, let's change this track, get rid of that, and put a hot guitar on this one. Oh, well, let's put maybe some electric piano on this other track. By the time I turned around, the whole concept was changed. And when they played it back, it had nothing to do with Cabbage Town. Okay, when the track got changed, I said, this has nothing to do with Cabbage Town. It won't work. You've got all this money put in it. You've got to do another song. So I sat down. I said, what the hell can you do with this track? So up come Love Generator. And I don't know where it came from.
There are two versions of that song also.
Oh, yes. Well, what happened is, once again, the studio took so long, and I said, since you're going to put out an LP and you're out of money, I said, use the same track and make it a comedy version between Betty Davis, Mae West, Lula Bankhead, and Katharine Hepburn, and let them be at a party. And let them, you know, just be talking to one another. And so what it is, you know, I changed the different voices, which I really didn't rehearse that well, and make it a sort of comedy. And lo and behold, if a lot of people don't really like that version a lot. They really do.
Tallulah, do you think an established star could do a disco?
You Betty, haven't you done it all, darling?
Bitch, what do you think I invited you here for? Come in.
Now, girls, please, can't we be ladies? Okay, let's just go now.
With your red hot flare, I'd love to kiss you, but I just washed my hair. Get me out of this stuff with your big regulator. Burn my fuse with your love generator.
Crank this engine, darling. Get it ready to drive. Turn on your switch, darling. Make it come alive. Ooh, let it ooze your love infiltrator. Burn my fuse now, love generator.
Generator.
Regulator, darling.
Oh, oscillator.
Yeah, flagellator.
Penetrator.
Infiltrator, darling.
Oh, accelerator.
Please, culminator.
Generator.
Regulator, darling.
Oh, oscillator.
Flagellator.
Infiltrator, darling.
Oh, oh, Sarah Rader. Please call my name. Oh,
love on the scene. Love generator. Babies are pushing a key of conflict. Convulsions in me. Demons fight crime. Please, sisters roll. Drive me higher. Send tight soul.
The lilac star is blowing my dance. If only it was a fashion and violet again.
Dennis, don't say you love me, darling. Say I'm beautiful.
Really, girls, we must stop all of this.
How did you move from lip syncing to real singing?
Because the jealous queen kept voting me off the stage. You know, they gradually got more and more people on the stage, you know, so the way they had like 10 different performers. I started it, the whole kit caboodle. I started it. And they expanded it because more and more people wanted to join in. And so the owner of the club kept adding more and more to the cast. And the cast decided they didn't like me because I was very, very good with what I did. So they were jealous, and they didn't like that. So they would begin to just vote me off the stage and go to the owner and say, get Dimalil off the stage. We won't work. And, of course, the owners, being so namby-pamby, would kind of go along with them and tell me, oh, well, don't come in, and we're having some disharmony with the other entertainers and this, that, the other. And they did me that way all over town, and I said, well, the hell with them. I said, I'll just get me a band. But I'll just put a little ad in the paper and just drum up a band.
I'm getting to the end of part one of my special two-part show, Those Singing Drag Queens. And I admit, it's been one of my more ambitious projects for Queer Music Heritage, trying to do justice to about 80 years of performing drag artists. I know that in no way could I cover them all, even in two radio shows. Fortunately, I've got a huge website that allows me to upload extended versions of my show, where my internet listeners can hear more of the comments by Dimalil and many more artists. That, of course, can be found at www.queermusicheritage.com. And as always, if you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com. For tonight's show, I want to thank you all for listening, and I especially want to thank Dimalil for the wonderful interview. And I also want to thank her for providing me with a whole slew of memorabilia, which you can see at my site. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT Houston. And I'd like to remind you that you can hear part two of Those Singing Drag Queens next month on April 24th. And I'll cover the last 20 years of performing drag artists. And there'll be lots of dance music. And now for one last visit with Dimalil to ask her about our closing song. I've saved my favorite song of yours to ask about for last. Can you please tell me about the song Silver Grill Blues?
Silver Grill Blues, that's a restaurant that's been here since 1945. And on that album, I go into this long rap that sort of describes it, you know, being a little whitewashed concrete block diner. And it's kind of a greasy spoon type thing. So it just dawned on me one day to write a song about it. I was never really a songwriter. So that's how the song developed. And then I had some bands at the time, different ones and all, and then we sort of just developed the song. And I would sing it at all of my live performances. Consequently, made the Silver Grill extremely popular, because every time I did the song, it would send hordes of people over there to eat their chicken.
You have more than one version of that song.
Yes, I do. What happened to that version is it took so damn long in the studio. The first cut on that album is the original cut, but it took so long in the studio to hone it down and to get it done, and oh, it's driving me nuts. It was to come out on a 45, it was to be Silver Grill on one side, and on the other side was supposed to be Cabbage Town Katie. And so after it took so long, I began to decide, I said, well, why don't you just put out an LP? So in doing that, I said, well, you could use another version of Silver Grill and include a trucker and a waitress and make it a little bit more comedy. So that version came out, and people liked that one a lot, too.
Is that your most popular song?
Oh, yeah. But I would love to become known by another song, because the Silver Grill has not given me a chicken wing or a gizzard or a cup of coffee or a damn thing.
Thank you, sir. And here's your half ride to go.
Place for lonesome dude to sit in this here truck stop.
Well, now, here's one last stool right here next to this painted leg woman.
What's the likes of a beautiful young thing doing sitting here all by your little lonesome?
Oh, I was just thinking about maybe some nice chicken.
Say, sweet thing, how about you and me making a little time together?
The only thing I have for you, Buster, would be time to kiss off.
Come on now, honey. You and me can go out and drink a little white wine in the truck.
special parts here.
They would certainly think not.
How special. Tender southern chicken.
Say, precious darling, what is your name?
You can call me Lil.
Yeah, and I bet that's short for Lily Mae.
I would never be that common. It's an abbreviation for Lillian.
Listening to J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, a feature presentation of Queer Voices. Queer Voices is heard each Monday at 7 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Networks station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, and Jack Valensky, with remote correspondents Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. For more information about guests, events, and organizations mentioned in the show, visit queervoices.org. Some of the music you heard is listed or available on J.D. Doyle's website, queermusicheritage.org. Be sure to listen every Saturday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
On Thursday, April 13th at 7 p.m., Voices Breaking Boundaries presents acclaimed activist and radio producer David Barsamian for its 0506 Cultural Narrative Series in a talk entitled Another World is Possible, People Power in the Age of Empire. There will be food, music, and exciting conversation. All this on Thursday, April 13th, 7 p.m. at the Houston Artery, 5401 Jackson Street. For more information, visit www.vbbart.org or call 713-524-7821. This event is co-sponsored by KPFT Houston, Pacifica Radio.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.